From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of April 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass, and we'll hear some excerpts from yesterday's webinar about the prospective plantings and grain stocks report that includes Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen, all on this Friday edition of our program from Illinois Public Media. We'll ag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today down 13¾ cents. It settled at $7.35 for the afternoon. July at $7.21¾, 11¼ lower. In December, $6.88, up 4¼ cents. May soybeans down 35½, $15.82¾ the settlement price. And new crop November down 13¾ at $14.06¾. Bean meal finished $17.50. Lower the bean oil down, or rather up $1.26, and wheat futures in the July harvest month down 17¾ at $9.84¼. On this Friday, let's check the market action with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Hey, Todd. Good afternoon. Hey, I wanted to let you know I put up a 3-month trial for $150 on that website, so it might be a good time to check us out and see what our research looks like to you.
All right, so I have a question then for you, because you're what are your numbers? Were your numbers going into the corn and soybean prospective planting report? How close did you get?
Pretty good on the beans, 91 million on the soybeans.
There you go.
I'm at 90.6 on the corn, and I'm not going to lower my corn number. I still think there's 500,000 to 600,000 acres of fluff in those numbers, especially based upon the planning weather, Todd. It seems like that the diesel price and the weather could shift some acres still. But, you know, the clients I talked to before the report and after the report, and what we talked about at the Beef House Outlook meeting, was I think that the tar spot really did a job on the acres, and I think USDA picked up on that.
Yeah, I feel like that might be the case, given that the numbers were down in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana.
It seems big like states, Nebraska, Kansas, all those big states that really can do some good volume, even the irrigated states. That was what's so surprising. And then on the winter wheat, I came in at 34 million. USDA was 34.2. The acreage number in wheat is less important now, because, you know, we got to remember USDA is at 49.1 on all wheat yield. I'm hearing from soft red wheat clients as much as hard red wheat clients now that they're, you know, not real happy with their crop. Some have a beautiful crop, but some are not super happy with it. So I think we could be closer to last year's yield of 44 or 45 bushels to the acre nationally, and that would clip us and probably take us down to around or under a 500 million bushel wheat carryover. So when everything was said and done on the acreage and stocks, I still think we're more like 2008 and a lot like a wheat-led market. And that's kind of what I'll be writing about here in the next couple months.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you about, because we've had a soybean-led market, a wheat-led market, now a corn-led market. And you like to have wheat in the lead. I guess you're thinking that's going to happen again sometime in the future.
Yeah, and the wheat stocks, I kind of was tickled because they were down 22% versus last year, as you know, just over a billion bushel. But that was the last time we got down that low was 2008. So I thought that was pretty interesting to see that dynamic too. But, you know, you bring up the beans, and I think I have to say I'm on your camp. It seems to me this market is getting more clear cut in that either the beans pull down the wheat and the corn, or the wheat and the corn say, no, you're dropping too much. We've got to hold on to some supplies because we still got some demand rationing to do. So I don't want to oversimplify this market, but I felt like the last 2 days of the trade of the week really exemplified the soybeans showing those negative, more bearish fundamentals that a lot of us on your air have been talking about the last few months.
Yeah, I didn't know I had a camp, but you're right. After I missed that 1555, you and I probably talked about that by an hour. I was like, dang.
Everybody's in your camp. That's the way it is.
What else should we talk about today? Crude oil below $100. And that's been, but it's still high. The price of gasoline's going to put pressure on ethanol usage, I would think. Are you concerned there at all?
I am not concerned about that yet. In fact, the lower the gas price goes, the better for the consumption and the blending. And then maybe the USDA and the EPA and the Biden administration can, you know, knock something out with the E15 blend increase. What I think is probably I'm ready to talk about is anecdotally, I've heard from around the country that there are certain types of fertilizer that are in ample supply and they may be being held off the market. This is all rumor mill. This is anecdotal, nothing that I can point to say that this is happening. But if it is, and the Biden administration has let go of the SPR and the USDA has taken corn acres down, 4 or 5%, and surprised the market, it would make sense that if those supplies are there, or that if we're going to get a pullback in diesel and unleaded gas prices, it would be pretty much right now. So I'm really on the hunt for summer, fall diesel fuel and fertilizer hedges if we do get a good, decent pullback.
Anything for the livestock producer?
Well, the big thing for livestock is that pork and bean trade. You and I have talked about this for many months. The funds like to buy and sell hogs and soybeans together. That correlation on a 16-week basis has been running 90% positive at times, and it's held up above 80% for the last 4 or 5 months. I think the fundamentals of the hogs and pigs with dropping supplies and the fundamentals of the soybeans with 22% more stocks and a carryover that could now reach 450, 475 for new crop with these new acres would suggest those funds need to break that relationship back and break it down essentially. So I'll be watching for that, because if the hogs would happen to go lower, that could hurt us in the beef market as we get into the summer grilling season.
You think that's really very likely given the hogs and pigs report from Wednesday?
I don't want to say it is domestically, Todd, but I am hearing in China that they're still not out of the woods when it comes to their African swine fever. And I'm hearing losses in some major provinces are still pretty substantial. And that zero COVID policy is really hurting their growth, especially in cities like Shanghai. I think it was Morgan Stanley took their growth for this year down from 5.1 to 4.6%. I mean, that historically would create some pretty massive unemployment issues in China. So I am nervous about China and the pork situation and them maybe even being an exporter by the end of the year if this keeps up.
Yeah, complete shutdown starting today, in fact.
Exactly. Yeah, 26-some million people, I think it is.
Indeed. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great week.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, before you go, how do they get the trial?
Just go to globalcomresearch.com. It's globalcom with two M's, and there's a 3-month trial button there.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You bet.
Let's look back now at yesterday's prospective plantings report to get some context. You may recall that University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin was expecting a big increase in corn acreage. He had that number at 96 million acres way back in December, but tempered it to 94 million in January for corn and about 89 million for soybean. Work he has done clearly shows that when the price of corn goes up, farmers respond generally by planting more acres to that crop. Frankly, Irwin said during a post-USDA report webinar he thought the total acreage pie in the United States would go up by 5 million acres, reflecting not only an increase in corn acres, but other acreage too.
It wasn't that long ago that that was quite a bit higher. So if you look in 2013 and 2014, in 14 there was a peak of 325.2 million acres. And as of last year, we had lost almost 8 million acres of principal crops. So there, it went someplace. And I had thought that more of that would return with the high prices. Today's report said it did not. And we're basically flat on total principal crop acres this year. Although it is interesting, our accounting that we do does show that total crop acreage is likely to go up. We show it for 2021 at 340.1 million acres, jumping up 3.8 million acres, but that's due to an expansion in CRP acres and projected prevented plant acreage. That 4.2 million you see for prevented plant is just a historical average. And so one can always wonder, Joe, about how you add up all these numbers, but it does give you an important perspective. But the message is, and this is part of the big surprise to the market today, was no increase in the overall number of acres in the U.S. And that, of course, is then going to filter through all the other crop acreage numbers you look at.
Now, you might think, given Irwin's bias towards more total acres, that he'd be wary of yesterday's March 31 prospective plantings report. the it's probably the lowest acreage figure we'll see this year dismissal. He's not.
From a statistical standpoint, we would say that the numbers today are unbiased. Lacking any other information, you would just say these are the best estimates that we have. And this applies to not just the principal crop acreage numbers, but also to the individual crop acreage projections that were in today's report for corn and soybeans. You know, sometimes the numbers are hard to digest relative to your expectations, but history shows over and over and over again that the USDA March 1 projections are unbiased.
It is an important message, says Irwin, that the prospective plantings acreage numbers are good. Given that fact, here's what the report shows happened. Acreage committed to all feed grains were down about 5 million acres. Acreage committed to soybeans and cotton were up by about the same number.
We think that's representative of the really big underlying story, which is that despite the profits, like here in Illinois, our budgets show that corn is more profitable than soybeans, that the big story is really the story of the input price increases. That, and this all honestly occurred even before the Ukraine war hit. You know, the tremendous run-up in particular fertilizer prices clearly was important in farmers' decisions to, at the margin, move away from feed grains and into soybeans and cotton.
Now, this was almost exclusively an acreage shift caused by a fertilizer event. Not only was it about the high price of fertilizer, particularly nitrogen, but it was also about the reliability of supply. Joe Jansen picks up from the FarmDoc Daily webinar.
Yeah, there's a definitely a price story there, where obviously we've seen very high fertilizer prices, but also a supply reliability story where farmers maybe not sure about being able to procure fertilizer in a timely fashion in the way they have in the past. And that seems to have caused this acreage shift or been a part of the cause for the acreage shift away from corn and sorghum towards soybeans. The other thing to note here, one thing that I'd been watching closely, given my experience in the Northern Great Plains in Western Canada, is looking at spring wheat acreage. We've seen wheat prices obviously rally in a big way in the last month due to the war in Ukraine, and USDA's spring wheat acreage number really down, actually. Now, obviously, the bulk of that price increase has been concentrated in winter wheat, and that acreage can't really respond on this kind of time scale. It's not really something that's going to happen until next year, but does not seem to have been enough that rally in wheat prices to induce more spring wheat acreage.
That too could be a nitrogen story. Now let's take up what the U of I ag economist Irwin and Jansen think these acreage figures will mean to the price of corn and soybeans. The two put together balance sheets for new crop corn and soybeans. We'll start with the corn, and the balance sheet there is actually about the price of gasoline and how it impacts ethanol usage. Here's Joe Jansen.
With higher energy prices in general and higher gasoline prices specifically, we've got to think that consumers are going to start economizing on fuel.
Exactly. And then that's exactly what the weekly data show. Now, there's a lot of noise in these weekly numbers. The monthly numbers from EIA are more reliable, but I think this is a canary in the coal mine kind of moment, Joe. You know, we first saw, you know, look in February, that we were starting to run 1-2% behind 2019, but not too far behind, really. But those high prices hit, and I've really been surprised how quickly we're seeing the impact. You know, in recent weeks, we're running 6 to 8% behind 2019 pre-pandemic levels. And so that's the explanation. I think that's an important story to continue monitoring and watch as we move through the remainder of this marketing year.
Yeah, I think a lot of the chatter around the energy situation is, well, maybe ethanol can step in and sort of fill this like gap because the tightness in the global crude oil supply and demand picture. But it really, what you're saying is like, there's an element to which these things are complements. And if we drop if we drop crude oil use, we drop gasoline use, we're going to lower ethanol use, and that's going to have an impact on the USD, on the supply and demand picture.
We'll probably get a question on this, so we just will go ahead and handle it here, Joe, which is it's rumored that the Biden administration is going to give an emergency year-round waiver for E15, and that might offset this a little bit, but our number at 5250 is actually only about, what did we use, 3%, I think, decline to get there, Joe?
Something like that. Yeah, that's right.
And right now, the market is saying, you know, right now, we'll have to see how things, you know, balance out. You might argue that number accounts for some additional E15 use, even to make 5250 with these kind of retail gas prices and mm-hmm. the demand impact. I mean, it's just economics at work. We're just marching up an extremely inelastic demand curve.
Well, that 5250 number is 5,250,000,000 bushels of corn to be used in the coming marketing year to make ethanol. It's 150 million bushels lower than the number USDA put out last month during the annual Ag Forum. And given that, the pair expects the low acreage figure for corn to offset part of the reduced demand and show a new crop ending stock for the fall of 2023 of 1.66 billion bushels, with a season's average cash price for corn of $6 a bushel. They note this year will be the first time in several that the U.S. will not raise a 15 billion bushel plus corn crop. FYI, the great big soybean acreage number, a record for the United States, and only the third time more acres will be planted to soybean than corn in the nation, relieves some but not all of the worries that the oilseed will be in super short supply for the coming year. The two Illinois agricultural economists pegged the new crop season's average cash price right where USDA has this year's price at $13.25 a bushel for new crop soybeans. You may watch the archive of the Irwin and Jansen Post Report webinar on YouTube. The address is youtube.com/farmdocvideo. Or just visit our website at willag.org. It's Friday. Let's check in with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and AgriBolt to see what the weather forecast looks like. Hi, thanks so much for being with us, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Well, you know, during the winter months, we kind of had a theme. It was all about South America and dry drought conditions. And we've sort of had a theme in the hard red winter wheat growing regions about dry, although that's changing here in the United States and drought conditions there. And it's been pretty wet here as of recent. Maybe is there a theme we ought to talk about for the growing season in the Midwest?
Yeah, it seems like the farther east you go, the Mississippi River, the tighter the windows are going to be for any sort of work throughout April and possibly even into early May. And so, you know, what typically happens when you have big drought, like we've seen in the hard urban wheat belt throughout the whole of the plains, is that if it's going to break, it's going to break on severe weather. And right now I look out there across the Pacific Ocean and I don't see the jet stream, you know, being encumbered by anything. I think it's really just flowing wide open and it's not blocked up. And so what ends up happening is, like we've seen in the last 2 weeks, we've had a lot of severe weather and a lot of it's been south. A lot of it's been from eastern Texas through the lower Mississippi River Valley, then into the southeast. We have had some nasty weather in parts of the Midwest. But what it's done is it's put down a bunch of rain on places that we normally have completely planted by now and are going forward, and instead things are delayed. So then you take a look at that, and I still see that same jet stream going across the Pacific, and we're going to get a slight break, if you want to call it that. I mean, we still have two more chances of rain around here through the weekend, and then next week it just opens up again. It's going to start with another event down south. Then we'll be talking about this thing coming through the Pacific Northwest. And so the long and short of it is that if you were hoping to get a lot of work done this week, it seems as though Mother Nature's kind of slamming the door on us for not only the next week, but maybe the next 2 weeks here in the Midwestern part of the United States. So then we just start thinking, well, when do things open up? Because unfortunately, as my kids have reminded me many times, all my forecasts keep talking about cooler than average weather. So we do get these brief warm-ups and the soil temperatures recover, but then they're quickly followed. I mean, it snowed at my house yesterday, Todd. I'm not sure about yours, but we had snow spitting last night here. And it just seems as though we can't fully break away from the cooler weather, wetter pattern going forward. And there are places out west that would be desperate for it. I'm talking about Montana, California. I mean, California is going to go into its dry season, having had the driest start to the year on record. So it's just split. Half the country is desperate for rain. The other half would love to give it away.
I had little ice pellets. At least that's what the dogs told me when they didn't want to go outside this morning. Yeah. But what does the longer range look like? Have you thought about that for the United States?
I have. And this will be the fun thing, Todd. When we talk next week, we'll get brand new all long range weather data. So it all comes out on the 5th. We'll have a good discussion about what that's going to look like in our next week. But at this point, every single long range forecast continues to give us, you know, the worry of La Nina lingering around, and we're watching the cold water in the Gulf of Alaska. So just to kind of set us up for next week, the thing that I'm going to be thinking about here is, do the new model runs moderate those temperatures? Because if we go into another La Nina summer with cold water in the Gulf of Alaska, you know, our risk of developing drought later increases. So now it becomes one of those situations where, did we fill up the profile enough with all these really tight windows in spring such that we can endure long duration drier weather when the summer gets here? Because there is still risk for that. Now, just to remind everybody that's listening, I don't create this stuff. I simply report on it. But, you know, it's one of those years where I'm looking for the silver lining. I'm looking for the thing that would make the forecast wrong. And until I see a break in those ocean temperatures, doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
Does it still have an impact on South America? And what does it mean for the Safrina corn crop?
Yeah, it does. And so the fact that this La Nina made a bit of a resurgence in the month of March has helped push the MJO to the Indian Ocean. Now, that's a bunch of jargon speak for saying that slows down the monsoon. And so what happened is that over the last 30 days, we developed some drought conditions in eastern Brazil. It's about 20% of the Safrina crop. Well, it started to creep east to Mato Grosso, kind of an important state. And now what we're seeing here is that over the next 15 days, some of those places will be sitting at less than 10 to 20% of normal precipitation. And it's a critical time period for two reasons. One, the crops in pollination. And two, once you get past the end of April, the monsoon shuts down anyway. So we are basically starving the Safrina crop for a lot of moisture. And then all the rain is falling in southern Brazil where there was drought earlier and now there's flooding. So it feels like the whole planet, wherever we grow food at this point, has gone from one extreme to the other. And it certainly doesn't seem to be slowing down through the month of April.
We'll talk with you again next week and see if things change.
Yep. Well, it will, Todd. Don't worry. We'll have something new to talk about.
You bet. Hey, you have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible and joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. Commodity Week is up next. Stay with us.